if you believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning. Hope to start off your week nice and good here. Have a little bit of an echo coming in for those of you in the studio, if you can help me out. I took a caller. There we go. The echo's gone. Maybe it was just in my head. You know, sometimes that happens. Last week took a caller. I think it was last Wednesday from a listener from Tennessee. And took it with about 2 minutes left in the show. So wasn't able to get all of the information. But essentially, she lives on a ranch with her husband and some migrant workers of some kind snuck onto their property where they actually grow organic foods and were spraying pesticides all over their area. Called the sheriff's office. Sheriffs didn't show up until well after they were gone. Ended up doing an illegal search into their home, seizing their firearms, taking them to jail on different accounts. And then it's really rolled into a really big deal and asking my advice. And I got to tell you, she sent me an email explaining a lot more of this with a copy of a writ that she put together and filed in federal court. And I've got to tell you, this is deeper than I can help you with. The best thing that I can suggest to this listener or any of you, even though the ACLU is not big on guns, a couple of times they've taken gun cases, but they tend to be anti-gun and will not take cases if it's primarily a gun case. This is not that situation in Tennessee with this particular listener. It's a case where the police seized a gun, but it's not a gun case per se. Far from it, in fact, from what I read. My suggestion is to get a hold of the ACLU and give them your entire spiel. Make sure that the gun-related portion of it is really kind of on the back burner, and get them to assist you. That's the best I can offer. It's beyond me. It's a whole bunch of constitutional-related issues, and sometimes dealing with the ACLU might seem like sleeping with the enemy. However, in this case, you have so many constitutional issues that are there, I would imagine that the ACLU would jump all over it. And as horrendous as they are when it comes to guns, they do have a very solid track record when it comes to dealing with constitutional-related items. So my suggestion is get a hold of the ACLU, see if they can help you. If not, they might be able to steer you in the right direction. It is way beyond me. I am not an attorney. I've never been to law school. I know a reasonable amount, having been a police officer, and then also just basically studying things such as the Constitution and constitutional law at a far. But you definitely have some very strong cases, and you have some teeth involved in your arguments that you put forth to the federal court. So my suggestion again, try the ACLU, see if you can get it turned around in your favor, and basically stop and staunch the big government minds of the small county that you live in Tennessee, and get them to back off. Oftentimes, counties can be horrendous when it comes to the law enforcement, the policing, the courts. They can really get into their own mind that they are as powerful as the great and powerful Oz. And in fact, they need to be smacked down and put back into size every now and again. There's my suggestion. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. We're going to cover just a little bit about the open carry laws in California yet again. Now, if you listen to the show for any time, you know that essentially in California, you can carry a handgun exposed as long as it's not loaded. If it's a semi-auto, no round in the chamber, no magazine in the gun. If it's a revolver, nothing in the cylinder. However, you can have the ammunition on you, such as in a belt pouch or a speed loader. As long as the gun itself is not loaded, you can carry that way in California. And there's been a very progressive movement. I hate to use the term progressive because that usually means the socialists on the left. But in this case, it's the right word when speaking about the gun carrying, Second Amendment preserving folks in the state of California, spelled with a K. So here's the deal. You can carry a gun open and exposed. Now, they're doing this in a lot of places in California, namely in the San Francisco Bay Area, which San Francisco always calls itself, erroneously, the most tolerant city in America. Unless you're preaching conservative values, religion, values around the home, but things like people that listen to this network would tend to stand up on a soapbox and preach. That's when they try to get you to shut up and get you banned and get you barred from different places. If you want to stand up and talk about things that are, anti-church, anti-family, socialist, leftist, commie, you know, spew out of your mouth and be everything unholy you could possibly think of, that is what they're tolerant of in San Francisco. So here is a piece that was written by, it's an opinion piece written in a paper in the Bay Area, and it says, shootout at the Starbucks Corral. It says, Starbucks caters to college students seeking a quiet place to study, to business people looking to get their morning caffeine fix, and now to gun advocates seeking to raise awareness about current gun laws. The advocates call attention to the controversial open carry laws, which, listen to this, which gives a citizen the right to wear unconcealed weapons. The weapons must be unloaded according to California law, but ammunition can be within reach. So that one portion of a sentence, which gives a citizen the right to wear unconcealed weapons. Okay. Nobody gives you any rights. Rights are just there. They cannot be given. They cannot be taken away. Essentially, the way it went down in California, the way that it went down where you have to have the guns unloaded, was back in the 1960s, the Black Panthers marched with loaded guns on the state capitol. Not a shot was fired, but the state legislators, the entire legislature, felt that they were being threatened. And in fact, they were, because the Black Panthers didn't like what was going down in the state of California at the legislative level. So they, the next day, passed a law that said, okay, if you're going to be carrying a gun in public, it can't be loaded. There was no law that said, you're allowed to carry a gun in public. And then they amend it to, you're allowed to carry a gun in public, but it can't be loaded. There was no law that allowed you to carry a gun in public. All right. What they did was they took the right and narrowly defined it. You had a right to carry a gun in California, which you do now. What they did was they passed a law that says, we understand you have a right to carry a gun in California, but we're going to say that it can't be loaded. You can have the ammunition on you and close, but the gun itself cannot be loaded. So that's what they did. So nobody was given any rights. And it's not called an unconcealed weapon. It's called carrying exposed. So let's get all of that out. Now, continuing with the story. In an effort to raise awareness about these gun laws, gun owners in the Bay Area have recently been seen walking around town with their unloaded sidearms on their hips. Unfortunately for them, several protesters managed to get them barred from businesses such as Pete's Coffee and Tea, as well as California Pizza Kitchen. Starbucks has remained neutral on the issue. The gun advocates did not pressure anyone to sign a petition, nor did they get on a soapbox and preach. In fact, the only thing they did was go to lunch, but they were barred just the same. Now, so you see the differences here. The people that are pro-gun are actually carrying themselves quietly, professionally, peacefully. But the ones that don't like it are getting all up in arms and jumping around and trying to get petition signed and pressuring businesses and things such as that. They're just getting ticked off. Jumping around like a bunch of Mexican jumping beans on a hot skillet and the guys that are actually walking around, the people that are walking around carrying these unloaded handguns, are the ones that are being victimized. So it says the Second Amendment grants us the right to bear arms. It doesn't grant us the right. It recognizes the right. No, rights are, so whoever wrote this doesn't understand anything about rights. Although they're going in the proper direction, they don't understand about rights. Rights are not granted to us. This one just happened to be such a big right that the Founding Fathers decided to enunciate it in the Constitution. It wasn't granted to us. A right is a right. That's all there is to it. It says the Second Amendment does not grant us the right to, it grants us the right to bear arms. It does not state what kind of arms or how many. All it says is that the average citizen is allowed to have weapons. So let's let them have their guns. They have the right as Americans. Sure, we try to restrict and control exactly what kind of guns they can and cannot have. But the fact is, people are allowed to have weapons. These people are not criminals waiting for the chance to whip out their pistols and start shooting people. We should respect them as law-abiding citizens as they are. And Starbucks tolerance is a good start. So that's the story. This strikes me as having been written by somebody who's on the left, but recognizes that you can't go too far in trying to restrict the rights of people, because that's just going to be a bell you can't unring. It's just going to be difficult to stop that truck and back it up once we start going down that path. But to say things such as rights being granted or given to us or allowed. Rights are not given, granted, or allowed. Rights are rights. Power and authority are given, granted, or allowed. People don't seem to understand that. It's not that the government has the ultimate control over everything and then they allow us this or grant us that. No. The government exists, and we the people who have ultimate power, control, and authority, enumerate some of those powers, controls, and authorities to the government to take care of business, to essentially preserve our rights and deal with foreign countries. That's essentially the powers that are there. And we, as the people, can let the government know, look, we're going to restrict this power, we're going to restrict that power. And the way we do that is through electing legislators who would make sure that those kind of laws get passed. But we have such a brothel-laden community in Washington, D.C., and in a lot of state houses. California is certainly one of them. My God. The California state legislature spends about as much time in session as the United States Congress does. And there's no need for that. There's no need for any state, to have a full-time legislature. And anybody who is a legislator in a full-time legislative state government that tells you otherwise is just there to try to have more power and more authority than what's initially granted to them or that they ever need. So what I have told people from California on many, many, many occasions is, as I see it, the biggest problem facing the entire state of California, and they have a lot of problems. They're dealing with all kinds of budget shortfalls. They're dealing with all kinds of illegal immigrants. They're dealing with all kinds of educational shortfalls. There's a myriad of issues in the state of California. The real problem behind each and every one of those problems in California is a full-time state legislature, because they can be, as being full-time, what they end up doing is passing knee-jerk reaction legislation. And when they're not dealing with something of substance, they're sitting around bored deciding, oh, what law should we pass? Well, let's go see what the people who give us money to run for our campaigns want us to do. Yes, you want us to pass something related to carbon monoxide, or you want us to pass something dealing with the lumber industry or the building industry or secondary education or something like that. So, okay, sounds good. I owe you one. Let's do this. And that's the same problem we have in D.C. And the state of California is absolutely, positively the single biggest victim in all of this. Not only do they have to deal with the full-time scumbags in D.C., they have to deal with the full-time scumbags of their own state in Sacramento. So, with that in mind, if you really want to show these people something, join us, myself and Shalene Nightingale, May 1st and 2nd. What's coming up? The beginning of next month, about 4 weeks, we're going to be doing a two-day Shooting with Shalene defensive handgun course at Burrow Canyon Shooting Park, just outside of Azusa, California. It's in Southern California. For $200, it's an entire two-day weekend course, and we're going to do it upright. We're going to have a lot of people from California out there taking the course. The $200 goes to support Shalene's campaign. She's a very conservative-minded candidate for California governor, as the Rhino Schwarzenegger is getting his term limited and being limited out. So we're going to be doing a lot of wonderful stuff. I've already written the curriculum. It's about 500 rounds downrange in 2 days. Going to be great, great stuff. So go to 2aradio.com. Click on the banner on the bottom of that page and check it out. Hey, guys, while you're doing that during the break, I'll be back as soon as we're done with these messages.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, it's really no mystery that the NRA has really turned into, instead of a really pro-gun pushing agenda as an organization, more so a compromise organization. And they're trying to do compromise as really just as a way of being around, a way of doing business. It's not really... We're pushing for the right sort of gun laws. We're pushing for compromise laws so that we can actually get laws through. That's what they push for all around the country. So here's a little story. It says, is Iowa lawmaker Kent Sorensen too pro-gun for the NRA? Now, years ago, you would have imagined, wow, I never thunk it. However, listen to this. The NRA is reportedly threatening to campaign against a pro-gun Iowa legislator because he is pushing a bill that is too pro-gun. Representative Kent Sorensen is an outspoken gun advocate and one of the leading voices for Second Amendment rights in the Iowa legislature. He introduced and pushed for a right to carry bill that would have given people the right to carry a gun, concealed or otherwise, without having to obtain a permit. The bill did not pass because of a tie vote. Other compromise bills have also been introduced. Sorensen is against these watered-down bills, saying they don't provide true gun rights. The NRA is involved in crafting one of these compromise bills, imagine that, that was introduced last week by two traditionally anti-gun politicians. The bill was written in such a way that moderates could support it, giving it a better chance of passing. Sorensen came out against the NRA bill. So according to a report on ammoland.com, a lobbyist working for the NRA went to Sorensen and told him that if he didn't support the bill, the NRA would work to get his opponent elected in an upcoming election, an anti-gun candidate at that. The NRA has not commented on the accusation. Over the weekend in Iowa, over that weekend, the Iowa Senate approved a bill that overhauls the system for issuing permits to carry concealed weapons. It requires that sheriffs give a reason if they deny a permit and make such decisions based on consistent state guidelines. Basically meaning it would turn into a shall issue state rather than a mother may I issue state. So there you go. We have the NRA who is looking at Representative Kent Sorensen as being too pro-gun because he doesn't want to He really is not looking to do some sort of a compromise bill backing, which, why should you compromise on something that is a right? That's something I don't understand, is when the NRA looks at things and they decide, well, you know, we could do better with the compromise bill. Well, a compromise isn't necessarily always right. It certainly shouldn't be the go-to move of any organization that considers themselves pro-gun. Not in my book. Now, again, the only reason that I remain a member of the NRA is because they have an insurance for members for if your guns get stolen or lost, whatever. And I had to use that once. I had a shotgun that was stolen from the place that I work. And at night, there was a break-in. As it turned out, it was one of my employees, as I found out down the road sometime, that broke in and stole it. A registered ex-felon, in fact. One of the reasons I actually had the shotgun there, and I didn't even know he knew that it was there. Evidently, snooping around ex-felons find those sorts of things out. So that's when I switched to just carrying a handgun on me. It was there when I was there, and it was gone when I left for home because it was on me all the time. Anyhow, the NRA's insurance covered the shotgun because home insurance and private insurance, unless you have an incredibly expensive rider policy, you usually don't get much when it comes to having your guns stolen. As a matter of fact, at the time, I was so ticked off because I had set up for a rider just for my guns. And my insurance agent, the agency, the agent himself was a good guy, but he ended up inventing something and went off into private business on that and sold the insurance agency. And I had sent them a copy of all of my guns on an Excel spreadsheet. You know, the make, model, serial number, barrel length, caliber, value, all this stuff. And when this particular shotgun got stolen, I told them I wanted to make a claim. And they said, well, you know, that's part of your regular policy, which has a $1,000 deductible on guns and a $2,000 limit. No, 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 I have a policy. Oh, no, no, you don't. Okay, well, I can prove to you that I'm supposed to have a policy. If I don't, it's your clerical error because you have a copy, an Excel spreadsheet of all of my guns and values. And why in the world would I ever give anyone that information unless I was insuring those guns? Well, yes, Mr. Carnes. In fact, we do have a copy of that. Excellent. I'm going to come down there and set that thing on fire on your desk if you don't cover my guns, and I'm going to take all of my insurance away from you. Well, I'm sorry, sir. We cannot retroactively do this. It was a clerical error. We're sorry, but you're shit out of luck. Pardon my French. So what I ended up doing was filing with the NRA, got it handled, and then moved all of my insurance from that carrier to a different carrier. It cost them quite a bit over the last several years. Anyhow, that's the reason I'm still an NRA member, because they hooked me up, not because of their legislative compromising. Stay tuned, guys. Plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. Sorry, guys, just as I was closing out that last segment, I used a term blank out of luck that I should not have used. It just kind of rolled off the tongue and happened. I'm sorry. I need to realize I'm not having a discussion in a bar. I'm on the radio, so sorry about that, guys. I want to read a story to you out of St. Louis that's entitled, Out of the Police. A cop charged in a man's death had pushed him down the steps. Okay, so listen to this. This is out of Overland, Missouri. An Overland police officer charged in a man's death had quarreled with the man and pushed him down a flight of stairs in an Overland duplex, according to investigators this last Tuesday. A surveillance camera the victim kept for security may have helped crack the case. The victim, a fellow by the name of Ken Hamilton, 49 years old, was pushed the night of March 20th after the altercation with Hamilton's duplex, at Hamilton's duplex on West Milton Avenue. He died 5 days later on March 25th, according to the St. Louis County Medical Examiner's Office. On Monday, Overland Police Officer Andrew Thomas Rangeisen, R-A-N-G-E-I-S-E-N, somebody figure out how to pronounce that for me, was charged with one count of first-degree involuntary manslaughter. That officer, 34 years old, is a 7-year veteran of the Overland Police Department. Quote, there was a verbal argument which led to the officer pushing the citizen. That was according to county police spokesman Rick Eckert this last Tuesday, continuing by saying, the citizen fell down a flight of stairs. The citizen fell, okay. Overland Police Captain Michael Laws, the acting police chief of Overland, said a few other Overland officers have been suspended with pay from the department while the investigation continues to see what role, if any, they had. Laws refused on Tuesday to say how many other officers were involved or to identify them. The victim's brother, who handed a surveillance tape over to the police, now says the tape may have been erased. Neighbors, by the way, on that note, you never, ever, and I mean ever, hand anything over to any police or government agency, agent, bureaucrat, elected official at all without having made a duplicate, be it a tape, photograph, a written note, anything. You don't ever, ever hand over anything without having a duplicate. And that duplicate must be secured. The best way to secure these is out of your hands and off of your property. There are places that you can keep it under your control, out of your hands, off of your property. My suggestion is, and has been for some time, I don't know if I've ever spoken about this on the radio show, is get yourself a private vault. These private vaults, essentially what they are, is they are, like the security boxes you can get at the bank, right? But they are from a private company that don't keep names, signatures, or anything like that. They're a private company. You cannot have any sort of attachment to this private vault. You cannot have a judge issue a warrant because nothing exists that says that you have it. But you do. That's the kind of place to hold these things. Continuing, neighbors described Hamilton, the victim, as an unemployed man who lived with his brother and nephew. He was known about the neighborhood for driving a rusty Jeep, adorned with police lights and a siren. A police wannabe is how one neighbor described Hamilton. On March 20th, a Saturday night, Hamilton apparently got into a road rage incident with another motorist and used his Jeep's police lights and siren at one point. When police heard about that, they knew who it was and they went to Hamilton's house. Laws did not provide details, Laws being Captain Laws, did not provide details about what happened next, but said officers did use guns or taser, or I'm sorry, did not use guns or tasers on the man. But, and said, quote, the gentleman got hurt and subsequently died from his injuries, Laws said. Obviously, this is a very tragic situation. Hamilton's brother, Joe Hamilton, apparently heard thumping noises and went to investigate. He found Ken Hamilton at the bottom of a staircase that separates two duplexes, but Joe Hamilton saw no police officers out there. The Hamilton brothers had a surveillance camera mounted on the side of the duplex, with the lens trained on a walkway leading to the front door of their Milton Avenue address. Another camera was pointed to the street. Joe Hamilton said he gave Overland investigators a tape from that camera to help determine who had been there earlier. Joe Hamilton told the Post-Dispatch on Tuesday that when he gave the tape to police, quote, I thought they were on my side, end quote. At that time, he didn't know a police officer is the one who allegedly pushed his brother, By the time Overland police had turned the tape over to county investigators, it had been erased, Joe Hamilton alleged. Imagine that. Imagine that. Imagine that cops protecting cops, cops investigating cops, protected other cops, and have now gotten so deep into a form of perjury and hampering an investigation, who's going to arrest these cops protecting the other cops? By the time the Overland police had turned the tape over to county investigators, it had been erased. Yes, that is the society within police departments. It's exactly what happens. I would venture to say probably 90% of the police departments, you know, let's be honest, 98% of the police departments in the country would have done exactly the same thing. They'd have taken the tape, looked at it, erased it, and then turned it over. Or said it was somehow destroyed, something like that. An autopsy was performed by Dr. Kamal Sabawal, I think is how you pronounce his name, who declined comment through a spokeswoman this last Tuesday on the cause of death. Hamilton was taken off life support at the hospital on March 25th after some organ donations were made. Captain Law said St. Louis County Police to investigate on March 21, the day after the incident. We don't want anybody accusing us of a cover-up, Laws told the Post-Dispatch on Tuesday. Well, what happened to the tape? There's a cover-up going on under your own agency. Now, it sounds as though Captain Laws seems to be the right kind of guy. The rest of his department, his underlings, unfortunately do not. The county police department's investigation resulted in charges filed this last Monday against the officer-involved Ring-a-ding-ding lives in Troy, Missouri. Once the warrant was issued on Monday, bond was set at $40,000. He surrendered to police on Wednesday, posted 10% of the $40,000 bond, and was released. So this guy killed someone else and is out on $4,000. So it'll be interesting to find out what happens with this. I, as you well know, am a former Las Vegas Metro police officer, and the reason, I shouldn't say the reason, not the reason. One of the things that led me just to simply resign, one of the primary reasons, was dealing with my coworkers who had the mentality of Neanderthal. Literally, take away all intellectual capabilities, all intellectual thought, and all intellectual prowess. You insert that with Freud's id. You give him a gun and a badge and a car that has lights and sirens, and you send him off to the street. And that was the vast majority of the guys that I worked with. You know, it's interesting, too, because it seems as though, as police get seasoned, and they're there for several to many years, they tend to get some of the intellectual prowess back. Some of the intellectual prowess that they needed to have to get the job. And then when you get on the street, you just turn into a thug running around with other thugs. And then eventually, as you mature, you get some of that intellectual prowess back, which would then tend to lead you away from working patrol and become a detective of some kind or an administrator. Therefore, you're no longer dealing directly with the public, at least not firsthand. So, what that leaves you with is dealing with thugs on the street when you encounter police, even sometimes at the detective level, with some of the smaller departments, even with, you know, some of the bigger departments at that. And if you have any sort of intellectual prowess, you will generally be a higher level detective, maybe a second tier detective that doesn't deal with the public much at all. Or you'd go into the administration and start making rank. Now, that means that the vast majority of cops you're going to deal with, from my experience, are going to be the thug-minded people. Now, I was never thug-minded. Couldn't stand that. And there were a few other guys, generally guys that had been on the department at least 8 years or so, that were still on patrol, out on the street, that were doing good things. The very first training squad I was ever assigned to, right out of the academy, the guy with the least amount of experience had 5 years on. The guys with the most experience were pushing 17 years, 16 plus. Now, I could really get along with these guys. This was great. Man, I thought, wow, if this is the way police work is, and these are the kind of guys I'm going to deal with, it's going to be great. Then, at the end of my, 12 weeks there? 9 weeks. 9 weeks, I think, at that particular substation with that particular group of professionals, I got transferred across town to another substation. In fact, the one that patrolled the area in which I grew up in. Okay, where I grew up, where I lived, where I went to school, where I worked. So I was excited. I knew the area. And I ended up on a squad that the guy with the most experience had on 8 years. Most of the guys had between 2 and 5. And they were all thugs. The guy who had on 8 years and the guy who was just below him with about 7.5 were the intellectual guys, but they stuck close together and saw everybody else's thugs and treated the new guys out on patrol, the trainees, as thugs, because they figured we were. As it turns out, those two guys found out much later that I was not of the thug mentality. And the whole thug mentality was not only allowed, it was on that particular squad. In fact, it was encouraged. For instance, the sergeant's younger brother was one of the training officers on that squad. Now, to have blood family members on the same squad is probably not the best idea. Certainly if one of them is a supervisor, because his brother ended up doing some things on the job. He ended up being my second to last training officer, this guy. And there was a couple of things that he did which absolutely put me aghast. In fact, one of them was so bad, so unmercifully bad, a decision he made on a call. I actually filed an officer's report on it as a trainee, as his trainee. That's how egregious this particular situation was. And what happened with it? Nothing. Did the sergeant get a copy of the officer's report? Oh, absolutely. Did he do anything at all about it? Not at all. Not at all. Now, there are certain things that certain departments can really, they can sway on. They can lean a little bit one way or lean a little bit other. You know, the officers are allowed to make some on-the-spot decisions. There are, certainly Las Vegas Metro is one of those departments, but there's a lot of things that you just simply cannot do, such as a major felony. You don't just let people go when you have probable cause to arrest them on a major felony, which happened to be the case in point. Stopped a car that was driving a little erratically on a Friday evening, headed down towards Las Vegas Boulevard, towards the Strip. Ends up two young, very beautiful young ladies are in this car. As it turns out, they work as escorts in Las Vegas, which is illegal. There is no prostitution allowed in Clark County, where Las Vegas is, or Washoe County, where Reno is. But prostitution is otherwise legal or tolerated in the other 15 of the 17 counties here in Nevada. So they certainly had a pimp. They were driving a car that was registered to him. And they had a huge bag full of marijuana buds. Like, really big, like a couple of, it was probably one of those big 5 gallon freezer Ziploc bags full. I mean, a huge amount. Enough for possession, trafficking, intent to sell, all of these great felonies. And, you know, they offered all this information up. Yes, we're escorts. We have a pimp. This stuff is his. He sent us to grab it. We're driving back. We're all going to party tonight. He's going to sell this stuff off. Give it to some of the girls, blah, blah, blah. Told us everything. And I'm thinking, great, this is awesome. Because what we're going to do is we are going to book these girls. We're going to tow the car. We're going to bag this evidence. And we're going to turn it all over to Vice and Narcotics. They work together rather closely. And they're going to be able to build a case, bust this pimp, and take down his whole racket. This is awesome. As a rookie cop, I'm feeling really good. Well, my training officer at the time was kind of a none too attractive little troll of sorts, in my opinion. And was married. As a matter of fact, I had gone to high school with his wife, as I found out later. She was pregnant, having some difficulty with the pregnancy, and I guess he was a little frustrated in that department. Ends up that these girls are batting their eyes at him. Of course, it doesn't work on me. I don't care. I mean, I date girls like this on a regular basis. And I should say of that, not of the ilk, but of the look, gender, and age. And so I'm not impressed with this eye batting. He decides to take over the call, takes the huge bag of weed, and tells them, go ahead, you're free, don't do this again. Right. So now we're standing there without an event and a huge bag of weed. And we go to critique the call afterwards, and I told him, you know, I don't think you want me to critique the call. Oh, yeah, I do. Now I really do. Okay, well, here's the deal. I'm going to file an officer's report on this, and you are going to book this evidence under a car stop event number. Here's the event number. This is what you're booking this under. It's going under just your name, not me. I'm filing an officer's report as to why my name isn't on there and exactly what went down. Because this is malfeasance of duty. This is negligence of a law enforcement officer, of a police officer. And you should be happy if something doesn't come down. That's the way I was a cop, guys. Stay tuned. More to come.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Guys, we need to hold police to a much, much higher standard. Not just while they're on the job, but because they have that job and that responsibility. Here's a perfect case out of New Jersey explaining that. Now, every time I read a case out of New Jersey, the cop or cops involved fail to be charged with a crime. So if you want to be the most egregious thug with the badge, go do it in the state of New Jersey, because they're not going to do anything to stop you. Here's a story. The parties can't agree on what happened that December night in 2007 when seven state troopers met a Rider University student at Trenton at a Trenton nightclub, brought her to the Ewing home of one of the troopers, and had sex with her. Seven troopers. She said it was rape. They insist the sex was consensual. She says they gave her alcohol and that she was drunk. The troopers say she wasn't. And the troopers' lawyers say that they suppressed DNA evidence that proves she had sex with another man after the troopers. Sure. After a seven-month investigation, county prosecutors decided not to present a case to the grand jury, and no charges were filed. This is where prosecutors send stuff to a grand jury without even thinking about it. But in this case, they're not going to do it. But one fact is clear. Seven state troopers put themselves in a compromising position that, in the end, disgraced the uniform and the state. At best, this was a trooper orgy, each officer taking his turn with a co-ed of debatable impairment. Rape or no rape, former Attorney General Ann Milgram was right in trying to get the troopers fired. But a stunning deal with the new Attorney General's office, which declined comment, will allow the sexual tag team members to keep their jobs. The troopers' attorneys argue that the state can't regulate off-duty sex, but the state can and should draw a line on appropriate behavior for its most prestigious police agency. Their troopers should have been fired. I couldn't agree with you more. Seven troopers of varying ages with a co-ed. Who knows how old this co-ed was, if she's even old enough to drink. Something tells me that they say, oh, she wasn't drunk. But if she was behind the wheel of a car and they were doing a DUI checkpoint, she probably would have been arrested. So it all depends on what avenue you want to arrive at as to the conclusions of how drunk somebody might have been or what your what your just devious, disgusting behavior was all about. I have to tell you guys, New Jersey is the single most pathetic state in the entire union when it comes to prosecuting cops for breaking the law. Seven troopers raped a co-ed and get to keep their jobs. What does she have to go through for the rest of her life? Riddle me that, Batman. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.